This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Well, Margaret, we saw a deadline come and go last week. States had to decide by February 15th whether they would set up their own health insurance exchanges or let their states be covered entirely by the federal exchange.
Well, those online insurance exchanges are supposed to be in place and ready for consumers by October 1st of this year. I think a lot of states felt it was just too much of a burden or simply refused to participate for their own political reasons.
It looks like half the states in the nation will not be setting up exchanges. Those states led largely by Republican governors, and in states with very high demand like Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Texas have opted out.
Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey said that deferring to the federal insurance exchange was the responsible choice for his state. Not all stakeholders on the payer and provider side would agree with that. They were lobbying for the state exchanges to be set up so they'd have more local control. But either way, we're getting to the same end point.
That we are. And on the other side of the coin, 17 states in the District of Columbia have been given conditional approval by Health and Human Services to set up their own state-based insurance marketplaces, which will offer one-stop shopping for insurance and Medicaid coverage.
An estimated 12 million customers are expected to buy their insurance online by next year, and that number expected to hit close to 30 million by 2020.
A few more Republican governors, though, are switching their tune about Medicaid expansion. Governor Brewer of Arizona and the governor of Ohio as well, now leaning towards agreeing to expand eligibility requirements for Medicaid coverage.
Well, Mark, we predicted this would happen because the economics are just too hard to ignore. The federal government is picking up the tab for the first 3 years of that expansion, and I have to imagine that their provider communities were lobbying strong on behalf of that.
Our guest today is focused in on healthcare needs of the nation, especially in the areas of prevention.
Dr. Jeffrey Levy is the executive director of the Trust for America's Health, a nonprofit policy organization that works to make disease prevention a national priority.
We'll hear about other viral claims regarding the healthcare law from Laurie Robertson, managing editor of factcheck.org.
And no matter what the topic, you can hear all of our shows by Googling CHC Radio.
And as always, if you have comments, email us at chcradio.com or come find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'd love to hear from you.
We'll get to our interview with Jeffrey Levy in just a moment.
But first, here's our producer, Marianne O'Hare, with this week's headline news.
I'm Marianne O'Hare with these healthcare headlines. The deadline has passed. The states have spoken. It appears we are a nation divided. 26 states opting out of setting up their own insurance exchanges. Online insurance marketplaces called for under the Affordable Care Act that would allow folks to purchase insurance online like they would vacations on travel websites or purchases on Amazon.com. 26 mostly GOP governors opted out of setting them up, meaning the federal government will have to offer insurance marketplaces for folks living in those states. 17 other states are going ahead with setting up exchanges, and another handful of states are utilizing a third option, setting up a partnership with the federal government. Meanwhile, beginning in 2014, seniors will be paying less out of pocket for drugs, about 5% less. For those enrolled in Medicare Part D, the standard deduction will be reduced to $310 next year, those cuts attributed to provisions in the Affordable Care Act. The Obama administration has announced a sweeping plan this week to achieve a full mapping of the human brain. The multi-billion dollar plan will coalesce research from experts around the globe to chart the millions of neurons and brain functions still yet to be mapped. The measure, like the quest to map the human genome, will likely yield a host of new treatments and cures for everything from Alzheimer's and Parkinson's to better treatments for depression and autism. I'm Marianne O'Hare with these healthcare headlines.
We're speaking today with Dr. Jeffrey Levy, Executive Director of the Trust for America's Health, a nonprofit organization dedicated to making disease prevention a national priority. Dr. Levy is the lead author on a report just released, A Healthier America 2013, Strategies to Move from Sick Care to Health Care in the Next 4 Years. Dr. Levy has authored numerous reports and testified before Congress on disaster preparedness, environmental health, chronic disease, and obesity epidemic. He's also an associate professor at George Washington University's Department of Health Policy. He served as an associate editor of the Journal for Public Health and was deputy director of the White House Office of National AIDS Policy. Dr. Levy, welcome to Conversations on Healthcare.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
You know, Jeffrey, your organization, Trust for America's Health, has been working for 10 years now, focusing on ways to improve public health and health care in America. And you recently released a report, A Healthier America 2013, which takes a look at strategies for moving the American health system from sick care to true health care in the coming years. So what areas of health care are you most concerned about, and where have you focused the bulk of your effort?
You know, so much of our healthcare delivery system is focused on dealing with problems after they have caused us to be sick, rather than preventing them in the first place. And so we are very oriented to a primary care system. And so our focus really is on how do we create a society where the healthy choice becomes the easy choice, where people are more active and eat better, get their immunizations, do the things that will keep us healthy in the first place, keep us productive in the first place, and therefore make us not need the sick care system as often. So we're really focused on those kinds of interventions, you know, policies and practices so that, you know, kids get healthier food in school and our neighborhoods are walkable and safe, to also making sure that, you know, we get the screenings we need early, get early diagnoses of conditions so they can be dealt at earliest stages where they're best treated, but also getting the immunizations and the other clinical preventive services that keep us healthy.
Well, Jeffrey, that's a very broad agenda, and I know that inherent within that is a deep concern with the toll of chronic disease in this country, and you suggest in the report that that's a leading cause of health costs and death in this country. And note that one in two Americans is living with some kind of chronic disease, like type 2 diabetes, and of course rates will increase, we can expect, due to an aging population, but also due to the nation's obesity problem. You've noted that there's two possible futures we face in this scenario. So for our listeners, what are they and what are the solutions that you are proposing that would lead to a better, healthier outcome for the country?
The concern that we have is that, you know, in today's world, about 75% of our healthcare costs are associated with chronic diseases. Most of those chronic diseases are preventable or very well managed if we do things outside the clinical setting, like being more physically active and eating healthier and controlling our weight. And we continue to have a growing obesity epidemic. Right now, over 30% of Americans are obese. We did some work with some modelers that showed that, you know, 20 years from now, we could end up with over half the population being obese. And that has huge health consequences. So the choice we face right now is moving forward with a growing chronic disease burden, growing healthcare costs, or we could do the very basic things that need to be done, not just to manage these diseases well, but also to prevent them in the first place and reverse them in some cases so that we all end up being healthier and our healthcare costs are lower and our quality of life is better and we're more economically competitive. You know, some of those solutions are pretty straightforward, and the other major leading cause of death, preventable death, is tobacco. So if we focused on those three things, we could prevent a lot of this chronic disease. We can reverse some of this chronic disease. There are some wonderful community-based programs that have actually successfully reversed the trajectory of people who have prediabetes. And those are the kinds of programs that we need in place. Those are the kinds of policies we need in place so that our healthcare system does not become so burdened with healthcare costs, but more importantly, that we as Americans lead healthier lives.
Let's talk a little bit about that, because you say that the real work in health reform will happen when there is a coordinated and modernized approach to the public health system, that to really improve the collective health of the nation, we have to move beyond the healthcare system into communities where people live and work. Tell us about your vision for a modernized, unified approach to public health across the country, and what would it look like?
Actually, the Affordable Care Act created a mechanism for us to think much more broadly about how we create health in this country. The Affordable Care Act created a National Prevention Council, which is comprised of 17 of the agencies and offices across the federal government who have an impact on health. So it's not just the Department of Health and Human Services or the Veterans Affairs Department that run big health systems. It's also Housing and Urban Development and Transportation and Labor Department and Education, because we know, you know, what happens in the schools matters for health. People being better educated results in better health outcomes. We know that people who have stable housing are more likely to be healthy. And so every agency of the federal government, and every sector in our society has a role to play in helping to create health. And so the Prevention Council issued a national prevention strategy that really provided guideposts for all the federal agencies, but also for the business community, for the education community, for community-based organizations, for the faith-based community, and for the healthcare system about how we can keep people healthier in the first place. So that's, I think, the very large vision that's incorporated in that national prevention strategy. In the document that we just published, we focus a little bit more on the interaction between the healthcare system and the public health system, and recognizing that as our healthcare delivery system changes with the Affordable Care Act, as more and more people have insurance, we have to make sure that we continue to emphasize the role of prevention, of keeping people healthy in the first place.
Well, Jeffrey, we've been noting that there's been a tremendous resurgence in the last year or two, a focus on something that was talked a lot about in the 70s and 80s and not so much in the 90s and first part of this century, and that was the social determinants of health. Mm-hmm. As you've just described, education, housing, employment. What's the role of technology in influencing community health?
Oh, I think there are probably three things that we can point to that will make a difference in community. And so, you know, one of the investments in the Affordable Care Act is in creating a new program called Community Transformation Grants, which is really providing resources from the federal government to communities across the country. More than a third of the population is covered by this program. And it's really to support the creation of coalitions within a community that represent health, the healthcare delivery system, education, public safety, parks and recreation, zoning, whoever may be relevant to making that community healthier, for them to come together and say, okay, what will it take for people to be more physically active, that people have the opportunity to make healthier choices for food? What can we do to reduce tobacco use, to expand access to clinical preventive services? And they've been charged with making a real difference in their communities and adapting it to the needs in their communities. And so I think the second part is that so much of the messaging that we need to be doing around public health doesn't necessarily happen with a physician, as important as physicians are. But really, the notion of expanding the community health worker workforce is incredibly important. 30, 40 years ago, we had public health nurses. And I think the notion of a community health worker is a very similar sort of thing. Someone in the community, from the community, who can reach people where they are. In some cases, that will mean, obviously, using social media and very different types of technology than we did in the past, but we shouldn't underestimate the value of that one-to-one connection as well.
We're speaking today with Dr. Jeffrey Levy, Executive Director of the Trust for America's Health, a nonprofit organization dedicated to making disease prevention a national priority. Dr. Levy is the lead author on a report just released, A Healthier America, 2013. So, Jeffrey, you were talking a moment ago about the challenge that America faces on the issue of obesity, and it's clearly one of the biggest threats that this country faces. And yet, there are a lot of great minds who've been working on this, and we still don't seem to be making a lot of progress.
Well, this is a very large problem, and it's not going to be solved overnight. We really need to be talking about reversing this problem with kids. And I think we're beginning to see a lot of hopeful signs. We see some communities where obesity rates among kids are going down, and it's primarily around work in the schools and educating kids about healthy choices and changing the choices that are available in the schools. You know, and with kids, it takes so much less to change the trajectory. And, you know, one study where kids were given a diet soda a day instead of a sugar-sweetened soda a day, and that reversed their trajectory toward mm-hmm. obesity. So it's, with kids in particular, small changes can make a very big difference. With adults, I think it's obviously more of a challenge because we know how difficult weight loss is. But what we also know around obesity is that you don't have to become thin in order to become healthier. Mm-hmm. In fact, what the NIH has shown is that a 10% loss mm-hmm. in average weight can actually reverse some of the physical problems associated with obesity, including diabetes. And I think if we are clear about especially with adults, that that's the goal, I think we can actually empower people more and see some very positive health outcomes.
Jeff, I want to take a look at a somewhat different area that I know has been central to the focus of the Trust for America's Health, and that's really the public health science and public health infrastructure as relates to our ability as a country to respond to epidemiologic threats, to infectious disease threats, to bioterrorism. You have only to read how much panic there's been about the resurgence of a really bad influenza season or the norovirus that is sickening people across the country to remember that threats come in many kinds. And for all of our concern on prevention and chronic disease, we still live in an age where that poses a real threat to the American public as well. How much progress have we made in the last decade to strengthen and really rebuilding what many thought was kind of a crumbling public health infrastructure?
Well, that's a great question, Margaret. And you know, I think it's important never to forget those uncontrollable threats that are out there, whether they're in the form of a bioterrorist threat or some new bug. We do an annual report that actually assesses state capacity to respond to essentially an infectious disease or bioterrorist threat or any kind of natural natural disaster, from hurricanes to earthquakes, snow to snowstorms. And, you know, we're very concerned about how well we are going to be able to respond. You know, we spent, since 9/11, we've invested billions of dollars in rebuilding some of that core capacity to respond. But what's happened over the last two or three years is a combination of the recession and state budget cuts and cutbacks at the federal level in preparedness funding. We're probably not as prepared today as we were two or three years ago. And one of the things that we call for in this report is that, you know, where you live shouldn't determine the capacity of your local health department. Just because there may be different resources, we as a nation have a need for every health department to have certain foundational capabilities, because without them, especially when you think about infectious diseases, you know, they don't recognize county borders. And so if we are as strong as the weakest health department, and so one of the things we call for in this report is for the federal government to say, we're going to assure that every community has those foundational capabilities.
Jeffrey, your website has an interactive map of the nation where people can easily find access to data and health stats about their state and look across the country. It's a nice way to get a snapshot of the nation's health. Tell us a little more about other tools on your site, healthyamericans.org, and where are you headed in terms of the world of social media, in terms of trying to get this information distributed out across the country?
The website has a whole range of information, but if you click on your state, you can see how you rank in terms of a whole series of issues. It's also linked to the County Health Rankings Project that the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation supports, that you can also see how well your county is doing within your state. And it's not just about health factors, but also education and employment and other issues that can affect health. So you can see how your state is doing compared to the nation. You can also see what kinds of policies your state may have. We are particularly focused on obesity and preparedness, but there's a whole range of issues that you can see. So you can then see, how does my community stack up in terms of addressing healthy food options in the schools, for example? And that can be the basis for taking some action. We have actually a daily update on what's happening around prevention and the Affordable Care Act and other prevention-related issues that can also keep you in touch with what's happening nationally.
That sounds wonderful. And Jeffrey, we like to ask all of our guests this final question. When you look around the country and around the world, what do you see in terms of innovation that our listeners at Conversations should be keeping an eye on?
To me, the exciting thing is when I see communities coming together in as diverse places as Akron, Ohio, and Seattle, Washington. You know, in the case of Akron, Ohio, they came together around health in part because they knew in order to revive their community economically, they needed to be a healthier community. That would attract people to invest in their community. And that's what brought everyone together, from the health systems to the Chamber of Commerce to the labor unions to the parks and recreation folks, to come together and say, how do we make this community healthier by, you know, focusing on having a better healthcare delivery system, but also making the community healthier by making parks more accessible, by making sure that schools were offering healthier options. So each community doing their own thing. In Seattle, they came together around equity issues. Why do we have these disparities based on race and ethnicity in terms of health outcomes, and how can we address that? And that required bringing, it was actually led from the county executive's office, because there was a recognition that everyone had to come together to address these problems. So we're seeing a whole lot of creativity at the local level that I think is just very exciting to see.
We've been speaking today with Dr. Jeffrey Levy, Executive Director of Trust for America's Health, which just unveiled its comprehensive report, A Healthier America 2013, Strategies to Move from Sick Care to Health Care in the Next 4 Years. Jeffrey, thank you so much for joining
thank
us today.
You.
At Conversations on Healthcare, we want our audience to be truly in the know when it comes to the facts about healthcare reform and policy. Lori Robertson is an award-winning journalist and managing editor of FactCheck.org, a nonpartisan, nonprofit consumer advocate for voters that aim to reduce the level of deception in U.S. politics. Lori, what have you got for us this week?
Well, Mark and Margaret, we found a few healthcare claims in President Obama's State of the Union and the Republican response from Senator Marco Rubio. Obama said that the Affordable Care Act, quote, is helping to slow the growth of healthcare costs. It may be helping, but the slower growth for healthcare spending began in 2009 before the law was enacted, and it's at least partly due to the down economy. It's true that spending for 2009 to 2011 has been at its lowest growth rate in 50-plus years, 3.9% each year, and experts say the healthcare law deserves some credit by encouraging doctors and hospitals to reduce rehospitalizations and wasteful treatments, but it's unclear how much effect the law has had. On the Republican side, Rubio said that the law was, quote, supposed to help middle-class Americans afford health insurance, but now some people are losing the health insurance they were happy with. But people aren't now losing their health insurance. In fact, employer-sponsored insurance is expected to go up by 1 million people this year. That's according to estimates from the Congressional Budget Office. Rubio is referring to what is expected to happen in the future. Employer-sponsored insurance is expected to go down by 7 million people as the law is implemented. Some won't have an offer from employers. Others will get insurance from other sources like Medicaid or exchanges. But his comment glosses over the fact that 27 million fewer people are expected to be uninsured because of the law. If there's one thing the law is expected to do, it's decrease the number of uninsured significantly. And that's my fact check for this week. I'm Lori Robertson, managing editor of FactCheck.org.
FactCheck.org is committed to factual accuracy from the country's major political players and is a project of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. If you have a fact that you'd like checked, email us at chcradio.com. We'll have FactCheck.org's Lori Robertson check it out for you here on Conversations on Healthcare. Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. Well, it's midwinter, and by now it's a good bet that a majority of health-related New Year's resolutions have fallen by the wayside. An international aid organization has devised a novel idea for improving health outcomes for the kids they serve in third-world countries while improving the health and fitness of folks here at home. Cure International provides orthopedic and reconstructive surgeries for impoverished children in 27 countries around the globe.
And we're there to provide the highest quality surgical care to them and then the follow-up care afterwards to help them deal with things like club foot or twisted spines. We treat a lot of burn contractures and cleft lip and palate, and then also treat some neurological conditions like hydrocephalus in places like Zambia and Uganda.
Joel Worrell, vice president of Cure.org, says that the surgeries to repair club feet and other physical deformities average around $1,000 per child, so donations are a large source of funding. And they thought, what if they could tap into the American desire to attain fitness goals here and tie that goal to raising funds needed to help children in need around the world? And they launched the Champion Campaign. The campaign seeks folks to sign up on their website and become part of Champion teams who all make a commitment to lose weight, to increase their fitness, whatever that fitness goal might be.
We started the Cure Champion program as a way to both help our supporters achieve those goals, and through the help of some really, really generous celebrity coaches, we've now got the opportunity where you're not just sort of out there on your own. We're actually partnering you with an entire team of people who are all hoping to achieve similar goals.
Team members are there to support one another's goals, and each team member solicits sponsors to support them in their endeavors. And when the fitness goals are attained, the funds raised go to help a specific child in need.
So we're connecting you with the coaches and with a team of other people that are all trying to achieve this together, and we're giving you an opportunity to actually see the result of what your hard work and what your fundraising is doing in the lives of specific children.
CARE.org's Champion Campaign, a unique platform to help folks seeking to improve their own health while providing funds to help the health of others. Now that's a bright idea. This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of WESU at Wesleyan University, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.